Good evening, everybody. It's Mario with Motorcycle Knucklebusters, and we're back at it again. We've got a really exciting guest this week. We're really trying to bring you a diversity of guests, people that you're going to find both engaging and fun, and this one's going to be fun. He's getting ready to go. Well, he is on tour, so he's doing his Stupid Gets Tired tour. Don't get stupid, excuse me, tour. Also, he has a podcast, Who's Paying Attention? So this comedian, he is a comedian, been all over the place. He won season 3 of Last Comic Standing. And so without further ado, I want to introduce Alonzo Bowden.
What's up, Mario? It's Stupid Don't Get Tired. That's the name of the tour.
I know. I twisted that up.
You were dancing all around it.
Yeah, I mean, there's some days, you know, it rolls off the tongue and some days it doesn't. So now do you, I mean, you've been doing comedy for a long time. Okay. You've been in film, you've done specials and everything else. Does that ever happen to you, or is it a hard time rolling off the tongue, or do you just always have that natural, you know?
No, man, I've screwed up. I think the biggest screw up was when I introduced a woman named Pamela Williams as Pamela Anderson. That's never good. So, no. So I feel you, buddy. I've made the mistakes myself.
So, yeah, I hate doing it, but you know what? Sometimes they're unavoidable. So tell me about this tour you're on. I mean, you know, you're busy, you're out there, you're working the road and everything else. So tell me about the tour, what people are going to see from you, what kind of subjects you're going to talk about.
Well, I mean, I'm talking about everything. When I say stupid, don't get tired, you know, all you got to do is leave your house and you run into it, right? So I'm talking about anything from being at an automated, like, here's one that bugs me. The cashless businesses, I get it when your business is cashless, but guess what? If you have a cashless business and the internet is down, you either have a cash business or I steal your products, one or the other. So
right.
I talk about that. And obviously that's the day-to-day stuff. And then we got some big stuff going on in our society. You know, I talk a little about our division, our national division over the pandemic. But I love that we have somehow decided that 100,000 followers is the equivalent to a doctorate degree. Like, no, I'm going to go with scientists and doctors. Congratulations on your social media. So I talk about things like that. It's fun and funny. The response has been great.
Well, I think one thing that's kind of unique in checking out your comedy, having seen it through the years and stuff, is that so many comedians and people in general are shying away from the subjects that you take head on. And you're not bashful about it. You take it head on. You still, you know, you're able to poke fun at the way we perceive the world sometimes and what we've constructed in this society.
Yeah, I love doing topical things, social issues, political issues, etc. That happened, I'm going to say, about 15 years ago when I realized I started finding the world funnier than I found my life. So I started talking more about the world. The highest compliment I ever received was in a Playboy magazine article. And yeah, on occasion, I read the articles. And they called me one of the spawn of Carlin. And I was like, you can't get a better compliment than that as a topical comedian. I mean, we're the last truth tellers, Mario, especially now with the media has become so divided, right? Left side versus right side and this and that. And I see the gray in your beard, so I know you're old enough to remember when it wasn't like that. But yeah, so comedians, we're the last truth tellers. As Lewis Black, a friend of mine and a hilarious comic, said that, you know, we didn't want the job, but no one else is going to do it.
Right. Yeah, that is a hell of a compliment. I mean, I remember seeing Carlin years ago, and I actually walked away one time. I got a poster where it was all of his words you can't say.
Yeah.
That thing was like, you know, 3,500 words, you know, and you got looking at it like, man, I didn't realize there was just that many words we're really not supposed to say out there.
Oh, if he was around today, you know, now they're starting to try to ban books and every day he would lose his mind.
Absolutely.
in the society we're living in today. And this is why I say stupid don't get tired, because, you know, smart gets tired, Mario. Smart takes a weekend off. Now 6 more books are banned. We're like, what the hell happened?
Exactly. So now you grew up in Queens, New York, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. And so, I mean, I've lived in that area. I've lived in Manhattan, North Jersey, and everything else. I mean, so your exposure to culture, people, things that are going on, I imagine that's probably had a lot to do with your comedy and influenced you a tremendous amount.
I love that you brought that up, because I was just last night, I had dinner with a friend who I grew up with, who I haven't seen in 40 years. And we were talking about growing up in New York City. One of the great things about growing up in New York City is you are exposed to every culture, every type of people. You can't hide from it. I always say, like, if you're a racist in New York, you'd be worn out after one block. There's just too many. Like, I got to come up with names for all these different people. You know, I loved having grown up there for that reason. Some people say you grow up too fast in New York. I didn't think so. I think the exposure to the different cultures, languages, foods, types of people, et cetera, is all part of the education. And I thought it was great.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those international crossroads where you're going to see all corners of this world represented. And that's one thing I loved about New York. I mean, and, you know, I always look forward to getting back there. It's been a little bit of time, but we'll make sure we do that soon. So I'd love some of the subjects I've seen when you're doing your comedy. There was one in particular, and maybe you could talk about that a little bit. You talked about judging people. And so I think this is perfect. And you said, you talked about credit score. So tell people about that.
Well, we look for a bunch of ways to divide people, right? That's how we divide. And lately, sexual orientation has been this huge thing. Like, what are you? What are you, gay? Are you straight? Are you transgenders? Huge now. Are you queer? Are you lesbian? Are you bisexual? Listen, Mario, who you sleep with, that is your business. I'm not interested. If they said yes, go ahead. You want to give me some personal information to judge you on, Mario? What's your credit score? All right, because I'm going to tell you right now, I will take a flaming gay 720 over the manliest 580 in the world. I'm just saying. I got enough broke people in my life, Mario.
Absolutely. That really struck a chord with me. And I think that's something that, you know, you're right. People in this world, they always find ways to try to divide you, you know, and I think we need to be finding ways, you know, to unite us. But if you're going to divide somebody and you want to weed out the bad ones, you know, credit score can definitely be a great indicator for that. So let's talk about another thing that I liked. You know, you talked about strong women. And I love the way you talked about strong women. And we have a lot of strong women out there in the motorcycle world, as you well know. Let's talk about them.
Well, I have to say, when you talk about women and motorcycles, I love women who ride. I love women who ride, you know, their own bikes as opposed to being on the back of a guy's bike. And yeah, they are strong. And they're strong in the sense of I'm not necessarily saying physically strong. They're strong in the sense of doing things on their own and something they may have been told they can't do or they shouldn't do. But I like physically strong women too, Mario, because I get on planes and listen. If you can't lift that bag into the overhead yourself, you probably shouldn't have packed it. Now, you're wearing yoga pants, so go ahead and lift with the legs. I know you work out. You can do it.
Yeah. We've both done enough flying where we see them get that overhead, and you see them start teetering back and about to collapse, and somebody's got to jump up and finish the delivery in the overhead bin there. So,
well, you know, here's the thing about jokes like that now, Mario. Now I have to add the disclaimer. I'm just kidding. I will actually help you with your bag in the overhead. Otherwise, you know, I'm the worst there is. And well, I've been trying to get canceled, but I haven't had any luck because there's no better press than being canceled. So perhaps if I can get some publicity for not lifting a woman's bag into the overhead, I'll take it.
Absolutely. So tell me now, we're on this podcast, but now you got your podcast, Who's Paying Attention? So tell me about that podcast.
So where that started and where that comes from is what we were talking about initially, the media. You know, they have historically been the fourth estate, right? And it was the media that kept an eye on the politicians and whatever. And they would keep an eye on both sides. And you could trust the news. You know, we had things like, I'm going to go as far back as Watergate and other scandals where it was the news that broke in. And like I said, there used to be a time when if 60 Minutes was at the front door, they would have that camera crew at the back door and try to catch you running away because the media stayed on top of it. And then they just dropped the ball. And the media has now become a for-profit enterprise. I mean, there are still good reporters and stuff, but who's paying attention? Who's watching this? Who's you know, keeping an eye? The idiots are running the asylum now. So someone's got to pay attention. Someone's got to watch it. So a lot of my podcast is my take on stories in the news, and it might be funny. Sometimes it's serious, and it is my take. I do interviews also. I talk to other people, other comedians, and other people who have an opinion for various reasons. But yeah, but the core of the podcast is the fact, like we were talking about, that the media has dropped the ball, so we comedians are going to talk about it. I mean, obviously now the pinnacle would be The Daily Show, right? Which with Jon Stewart before and Trevor Noah now, they say more people go to The Daily Show for news than go to the news because they know that comedians, listen, we're not too crazy about either side. So we'll hit either one.
Well, I think that's the best part about it is you'll poke fun at everybody and you'll expose the hypocrisy that can exist on both sides. And I think that's why, you know, comedy is honest and it's an honest look at ourselves. And sometimes we deny, you know, the truth and, you know, you guys bring it about. So I want to talk about some of the other things. Now, obviously you won season 3 of Last Comic Standing. So tell us about that experience. That had to be, you know, like a tremendous journey for you.
It was phenomenal. Last Comic, I'll always describe it as my introduction to America, right? Because I was doing stand up in prime time and literally millions of people saw it, which when you think about it like that, it's mind boggling, right? To think, oh, there might be 10 million people that laugh or don't laugh at this joke. So I would never look at it as that big because then it's too much. It'll blow your mind. The eliminations for the show were on Wednesday, right? You get from the very first audition, you audition Tuesday afternoon. They invite you back Tuesday night. Then Wednesday, you find out who made it from the initial all the way to the finals. So I tell people, Mario, imagine having a job that you know every Tuesday someone's going to get fired. So my only goal was don't get fired every week. Just don't get fired. Don't. Next thing you know, you're in the finals and you're like, hey, I didn't get fired. it was a good experience. I'm still friends with a lot of the comics that I did it with. We went through that. There's definitely emotional ups and downs when you do a show and then like, OK, now let's wait and see what America votes. Does America like you? is a strange position to be in. Now, we did it before social media, okay? We did it back in, well, we did it in the infancy. So I have, to my thousands upon thousands of MySpace friends, I want to let you know that I'm still okay. I'm still here. So
the judgment
wasn't as instant as it is today with Twitter and Instagram and TikTok and, you know, everything. I mean, we're at a point now, like I did it before Facebook. And now if you mention Facebook, people are like, how old are you?
Right. So you won that season, but then you flipped the script and you were a judge for a while. So
I became a judge,
changing that perspective.
A judge on season 5, which is the other side of the table. And that's when you find that was really, Mario, when I found out how big it was to win. Because that's when I saw how many people tried out and tried to be on the show. When you're doing it, or at least for me, I was just thinking about me. I wasn't thinking about how many other people were trying. But when I was a judge and saw how many people tried to get on and competed on the show, I was like, wow, I beat a lot of people. When you're a judge, you find out that I'm going to say 80% of the people who came in weren't ready. And just, you know, it wasn't going to happen. 10% were really good, but it was that, that final 10% that's really going to win. Those are the ones that it was really the most difficult to judge. And then the other thing that's awkward is being a comedian and a judge, I'm judging friends of mine. I judged comics I had opened for, you know, and that's a weird, weird experience.
Dynamic. Yeah.
Fortunately, they got it. I didn't have any problems with other comics, had a few problems with managers and agents, but even then the comics would be like, look, man, it's a TV show. You roll the dice. It wasn't just being the funniest. It's also picking the right material, right? Because you could be a really funny comic and pick the wrong material for a particular night or a particular crowd, and it doesn't work. And then the unfortunate thing was, I know how funny you are, but I have to judge you based on what you did, not based on the fact that I know you, you know? So that was awkward at times. But again, it was a good experience. I enjoyed it. I learned from it. And the paychecks weren't bad, Mario. That's when I went from Japanese bikes to Italian. So that was
good. I love that. Yeah. You know, when you can step into the Italian bikes and stuff, that is always a good thing. So now you've been a regular guest on NPR as well. So tell us about that. And, you know, if people want to check you out on NPR, because I think you're on Wait.
Yeah, Don't Tell Me. I've been part of Wait, Don't Tell Me for about, I think it's been about 11 years now, coming up on 12 years. And I'll tell you, Mario, sometimes I talk about stupid, don't get tired. Sometimes ignorance is bliss, because the first time I was invited to do Wait, Don't Tell Me, I had never listened to it. I had no idea what it was. My agent told me it's a panel news show. They're going to ask you questions about the news. You got to be funny. I'm a news junkie. I'm thinking, oh, so this is all right. This is easy. I go on. I see the panel. I'm like, oh, all I got to do is be funnier than Tom Baudet. I can handle that, right?
Right.
and I did the show, and it went great. And Peter Sagal, the host, he was like, man, that was a fantastic first show. We're glad to have you. We're going to use you as a panelist, et cetera, et cetera. And it wasn't until maybe my fifth or sixth time doing the show. There used to be a host named Carl Castle. I mean, an announcer, Carl Castle. And Carl was retiring. And they invited me to Carl's retirement party. And I was like, I can't make it. They said, oh, it's going to be in D.C., this and that. I find out that, oh, yeah, Tom Hanks was there. Katie Couric was there. President Obama sent a video. I'm like, how big is this show? Who the hell is this? And that's when I found out, oh, 5 million people a week listen to Wait, Don't Tell Me. And it's a podcast that's huge and international. I was like, because had I known that going in, I might have been nervous.
Right.
So it's good that I didn't know that this is one of NPR's big shows. Now, besides the radio show, we're doing the Wait stand-up tour. There are so many comedians who are panelists now, me, Maz Gibrani, Tom Papa, Maeve Higgins, and the list goes on and on, that we're doing live stand-up shows in various cities, unedited, uncensored, just kind of a Wait live. We're not constrained by the radio broadcast or by the questions being asked. We can talk about whatever, and we've been having a lot of fun doing those shows.
Well, I got to tell you, that's probably my favorite show on PBS. So when I can listen to PBS and I catch that, and it's really interesting in the fact that Cody reached out to your people and to get you on here. And I wasn't going to be honest. I wasn't that familiar with you. I didn't think. And then all of a sudden I'm looking and I'm like, well, yeah, I know you from here. And I know you from here. And I know you from here. And you've done a lot of film as well. And you're actually in a movie I absolutely love. And that's called Bringing Down the House. And, you know, so when I saw that, I didn't put two and two together. Now, I believe, weren't you, when Steve Martin arrives at the house and he's wanting to get in and the parties, the pool party, all that's going on, didn't you stop him at the door and say,
Mario, my film career has been security guard all over the place, security guard to the stars, bouncer clubs, stuff like that. So you're right. In that one, I was a security guy who had to keep Steve Martin from going into the backyard of his own house because, you know, Queen Latifah's throwing a house party at Steve Martin's house. That movie was super fun to do. It was my first big feature film. And I'll tell you a quick story about meeting Steve Martin, which initially very intimidating because we're standing there. We're blocking the door, myself and a background extra. And Steve Martin walks up with the director and the extra said, "Wow, it's Steve Martin." And Steve just looked up and said, "I'm acting." And I was like, whoa, like he takes this seriously. Don't talk to him, whatever. So later on, it's lunch or whatever it is. And one of his assistants says, "Hey, you're a stand-up. Steve likes comics. You should say hello." So I go over to meet him. And he says, he's like, "Oh, you're a comic. What's your opening line?" I said, "It changes every show. Depends on, you know, what city, what situation." He's like, "Oh, that's great." And I said, "You were like the biggest stand-up comic in the world. You were the man and you just stopped." I said, "Do you ever miss it?" And he says, "Well, you know, every now and then I host things. I tell a few jokes." And I was like, "Oh, like what do you host?" And he looks at me, he says, "The Oscars." And I said to him right away, I said, "Who books that?" And he just cracked up laughing. And it was very cool after that. So nice guy. And yeah, I've been lucky enough to meet some huge stars in the business. And then I met Dana, a.k.a. Queen Latifah, who also rides. She's a motorcycle rider. We're talking about women who ride. She rides.
Oh, well, you're going to reach out to her, right, so we can get her on the show, huh?
Absolutely. Absolutely. In between episodes of The Equalizer, I'm sure she'll drop in.
Yeah. She's a busy lady, man. She's done fantastic with her career. So talk about those acting credits, some different things you've done.
Well, like I said, I did that one. Ken Jeong is Dr. Ken. Is an old buddy of mine. I'm telling you, I played bouncers all over the place. I played a bouncer on his sitcom, okay. The Dr. Ken Show. I got to play Secret Service for Leslie Nielsen in Scary Movie 4, where he was doing George Bush teaching the kids,
right?
Reading to the kids when they told him about 9/11. And, you know, George Bush was like, "Huh, what?" Needless to say, it was hilarious to do that with Leslie Nielsen. And, I've done a few other shows where I play that role. My favorite thing about playing a bouncer, Mario, is there's a big club at the Wynn Hotel in Las Vegas. And you know how it is when you go to Vegas and there's a club, there's all these security guys outside. Yep. And you got to wait in line. You got to be on the list. And I walked up to the guy and he's like, "You on the list?" And I looked at him. I said, "Man, I play you guys in movies." And he just started laughing and said, "Get your ass in there." So.
You know, and I love that because I think it really, and I want to bring this, bring back around to you. I mean, one thing I would say about your comedy is intelligent, it's raw, and you know, it's usually very, very clean. And I think a lot of people really respect that anymore because you're not getting down in the dirt with your verbiage and stuff like that. And you know, you're still able to deliver the goods.
Well, you know, people say that all the time, and I'll tell you why. Because I curse about as much as people do in ordinary life, so people don't really notice it. So, yeah, I'll drop the occasional F-bomb and this and that, and I will use language appropriately. You know, I say, like, right now we're in a period where we comics are being judged for things we say, and unfortunately we're being judged for things we said 15 or 20 years ago. And I promise you, I made jokes 20 years ago that I wouldn't make today, but they were hilarious 20 years ago. And the most important word in the English language that people seem to have lost track of is context. And you can use any word or any language in the proper context, especially when you're at a comedy club and you're being funny or attempting to be funny. And it's really ridiculous how we, as comics, lately we've been held to a higher standard than politicians. And Mario, they're lowlifes. We are not as bad as them.
No, right? I'm well aware of that.
To be judged on that level just ain't right. So language is important, but sometimes people get too caught up. You know, like a great example is Richard Pryor, right? Richard Pryor cursed all the time, dropped N-bombs all the time, which again was in the vernacular back then, F-bombs, whatever. But if you were to go through and change the word, that was, he grew up in a whorehouse. This was his language. That's the language he spoke. If you cleaned up every word, he would still be funny.
Sure.
See, that's what, and I don't know your rules on the podcast, so I don't know what you can say, but I'll just say that I was taught as a comic that F is never a punchline. You can use it for accentuation, but if that's what's funny, then the joke ain't funny.
And I really appreciate and respect you saying that, because I think that there's so much truth in that. So let's talk about you. I mean, so you ride, you're also a car enthusiast. I mean, you've been on Jay Leno's show a couple of times and with him. So what do you ride? What, you know, what kind of cars do you collect? You know, tell us about all that good stuff.
I'm glad we got to this. I was like, is he going to ask me anything about motorcycles? I don't know.
Well, we tend to go more towards the individual, and you know, the common connector is bikes, but we like to talk about the person.
No, I appreciate it. In my lifetime, Mario, I have ridden everything. I like all types of bikes. I'm not one of those people that, you know, oh, you got to have a Harley or you got to have a this or a that, you know, whatever works for you. Right now, for some reason, I've been really into BMWs. I think it's because I'm tall, and as I get older, my knees get less flexible, and BMW makes big bikes, which work for me. So I have a Grand America, which is their six-cylinder touring bike, which I absolutely love. I have a bike called the Megamoto, a little-known kind of a naked sports bike they made in 08 and 09. And I have an R18 cruiser that's been converted into a bobber that I just absolutely love. Really cool bike, really fun. And but I have ridden everything from, I just recently sold my Honda Grom, my little 125 mini bike that I bought because when I was a kid, my dad would never let me get a mini bike. So as an adult, I said, I don't need your permission.
Honda Grom, and you're 6'4". That seems like that might be a comedy prop it of works, some sort. Though,
that bike is built on like a 3/4 scale. It's not tiny. So it was actually a fun little bike. You ride, so you know there's nothing more fun than going fast on a slow motorcycle. So when you have a miniature scale motorcycle that has a top speed about 50 miles an hour, but you're riding it at top speed all the time, that is super fun. Now, I've had Ducatis that'll do 150 miles an hour, but you never get to use that performance, right? You get to use it on the track, but on the street, you don't really get to use it. So it's a lot of times it's fun to have that little slow bike and ride the hell out of it, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm glad you said that. So R18 converted to bobbed out, huh?
Yeah. I like that bike. So the R18 BMW 1800cc twin, a Pose twin, a boxer. Yep. The bike people listening know what I'm talking about. I was kind of laughing because the first motorcycle I ever bought new was the CB900 Honda back in 1982. And I was like, wow, on the R18, each cylinder is 900cc. So yeah. I've kind of progressed from that. But yeah, I love it. It's a big cruiser, and I like bikes that are unique and different, and not a lot of people are riding the R18s. So I like being the only one on the block, you know, who has one.
Well, and I think the thing, when people look at that motor, because the way it extends out from the bike and everything, but they don't realize that bike is so beautifully balanced. It rides wonderful.
That bike rides great. All the weight is down low, so it handles well. And it's you feel it, you know, it has a vibration to it. It has a soul, for lack of a better word, to it. But it's also modern enough technology that everything works. So I kind of like that combination. Now, sometimes tech gets too modern. I'll tell you, I tried the new BMW RT, which is their twin cylinder touring bike. Yep. And it has this 10-inch screen, you know, one of these TFT screens. And there's an app that connects the bike to your phone so you can look at the navigation. And it's, Mario, it was, the technology sucked. Every time you start the bike, you got to wait for the Bluetooth to connect, and you got this, and it just ruined the experience of riding. And then I saw 18, and it had one gauge, and I was like, yeah, give me that. Let's go back to simple. I'm not against technology, but I'm like, make sure the technology works before you put it out there.
Hey everybody, thank you so much for watching. I just want you to know, check out our merchandise store. You can support our show, go there, purchase some of the products and everything else, shirts, other things we're going to be adding that help support our show and allows us to keep going and give you what you want. You can check us out on all the social media platforms, Facebook, iTunes, TikTok. Make sure that you like and subscribe to our channel. Make a comment about maybe some guests you'd like to see us have on in the future. Once again, thank you for watching. Now, speaking of technology, have you ridden any of the electric bikes?
Yeah. And I think they've progressed quite a bit. I haven't ridden the Livewire from Harley, but I rode some of the new Zero bikes. Every year, sure. I do shows at a rally called Americade in Lake George, New York. It's always the first week of June. Americade is always the week after the good weather in Lake George. You always go there. They're like, man, you guys should have been here last week. It was 75 degrees and sunny. Sorry about the rain. But no, I've been doing that for years. And Zero was there this year with their new bikes. And I rode the early Zeros, and it felt more like riding an electric scooter.
Yes.
And now they've engineered in a feel that it felt like I was riding a motorcycle. So I haven't gone electric yet, but I get it, and I think they've really improved.
So there's I know the folks over at Zero real well. Energica and Lightning make some really, really fun ones. I'll tell you, if you ever get a chance, what you got to try riding is an Onyx. And it's not a motorcycle. It looks like a bike, but them things go 70 miles an hour. We went out one time, the guy that started the company, we went and got some burgers under the Bay Bridge. And then we went and riding Pacific Heights and just shooting straight up those hills with no hesitation on a little bike. And you talk about going, maximum speed on something small, absolute blast. You would love it. And you'd fit that thing just fine. So you got to try that one. So if you ever want to get, if you're in San Francisco, I can definitely make that happen for you.
Cool. Yeah, they're the wave of the future, and it's happening. And it is fun. I mean, the electric bikes are definitely fun. Like I say, I'll ride everything. I rode an Energica superbike, and that was fast. You definitely have to get used to the instant acceleration of electric motors.
And there's no, you don't have the sound, you don't have the vibration, you don't have all those indicators, and you're not going through the gears. So it's the first time I rode a Lightning, their new superbike, I had no idea how fast it was going. I just went and did the course, and I came up to the turn, and I started back off, and I seen, I'm going 90 miles an hour. How fast was I going?
Yeah, so I don't think the cops are going to buy that one.
No, not at all. So I went back around, I waved, I just figured that was a hot lap, and I did it again. Now I'm not paying attention to everything else, and where I feel comfortable on the bike, and I'm looking at the gauge, and I hit 100 plus just like that. Crazy.
Yeah, the acceleration is insane.
Yeah, but a lot of fun. A lot of fun. So talk about, so I mentioned Leno. Tell me about those experiences with Leno, because now you got a comedian, you got somebody else that's into things you love as well, cars and motorcycles. I mean, that must have been a pretty cool experience.
Jay is the coolest guy you can meet. He has the thing I love about Jay, and I've always loved about Jay, is he has no ego about being Jay Leno. Like, he, Jay's the bike and car nut we would all be if we had unlimited money, which he seems to.
Right.
He always invites me on the show when he has some crazy bike idea. So, like, one time we were on the, I don't know if you're familiar with the Ural. It's the sidecar bike. And they're two-wheel drive. They're two-wheel drive, but there's no differential. The two rear wheels turn at the same speed, which means you cannot steer the bike when it's in two-wheel drive mode. It will simply plow forward with those wheels. So he's like, hey, let's get a couple of Urals, right? Big, heavy, two-wheel drive sidecar bike and ride a motocross track. And it's like, yeah, Jay, why not? Let's do it. And we... The most recent episode I did, we had this bike from the CC Motorcycle Company, which is a coffee shop and bike hangout up in Portland. They built a bike with a sidecar was a grill, an actual, I think it's Traeger or whatever company, but it's a grill. We're riding around cooking hamburgers while we ride the motorcycle. I'm at the light, jumping off, flipping a burger on the grill and going around. So I love doing Leno's Garage because I never know what he's going to call me to ride.
I love that. That's such a cool experience. So we're going to have to catch some of those episodes. So you're on tour now. Let's go back, talk a little bit more about the tour. If people want to find where you're going to be at, where's the best place for them to check that out?
The best place, easiest place to find me is my website, alonzoboden.com. You can always just Google Comic Alonzo. You're either going to get me or Cristela Alonzo. I'm the taller one. You'll be able to tell us apart. Zofunny on Instagram. And now I'm on TikTok. Which, Mario, I was very hesitant to TikTok. I always felt I'm too old to be a TikToker. But this particular special on YouTube, Stupid Don't Get Tired, in the part of the way we released it was we cut it into clips, and they released clips on social media because now that's what everyone's watching, right? People aren't watching TV like they used to. Everyone's looking at social media. And when they put some of my clips on TikTok, they went viral and I got millions of hits, which is phenomenal. And I was like, yeah, I guess I better get on TikTok because they're watching me over there. So you can find me on all the social media. I use my name, except like I say on Instagram where I'm Zofunny. And the reason for that is some guy took my name. He thought he was going to hold it hostage and that I was going to pay him thousands of dollars to buy my name. And I was like, nah, I'll just come up with a nickname that works. I'm out there all over social media, and we're going to be releasing more clips from the special. I have someone who helps me with that. She does a phenomenal job, and I'm out there.
Wonderful. So now we were just talking earlier, you've been out to Sturgis a couple of times. Yeah.
You know, a guy told me once, he said, once in your life, you have to see Sturgis. And I tell everyone the same thing. You know, people have all these different impressions of Sturgis. You know, oh, it's a bunch of drunken bikers. Oh, it's fighting in the streets. It's loud. It's this, that, the other. It is, to me, I never saw that many people on that many motorcycles in one place. And it was very cool. People were very cool. There wasn't any, you know, crazy street fighting and all of that stuff. I mean, you know, there's a reason they call the hardcore 1%, because that's what it is. It's 1%. And if you're not involved in it, I don't think it's any hassle to you. No, Sturgis was, and the riding was beautiful. You know, we rode to Mount Rushmore. We rode up in the Black Hills. The riding around Sturgis is great, but just to get there and go down Main Street and see an unending stream, thousands upon thousands. Now, here's a question maybe you can help me with, Mario. If you ride a Black Street Glide, how do you find it? Just curious, how do you find your Black Street
Glide? I have a hard time walking out of Walmart sometimes because I go in there and I shop and I walk out and I'm like, where the hell did I park? I can't imagine, you know, walking out of Walmart in Rapid City or something, or down on Main Street. You ain't finding your street glide. So especially at my advanced years, you know, you see the gray. Yeah. I think that's where my memory
went. It was super fun, and it's an experience. You know, there are certain things in the motorcycle world that are an experience, just like going to a MotoGP race, which to your listeners, that's the highest level of motorcycle racing, but going to one in Europe where yep. it is a true, it's like a major sport. And yep. it's the same thing. There's 100,000 people at the race. We went to Valencia, and this is back when Valentino Rossi was still racing. So it's insane. And that was the same thing where I was like, hey, I got a blue Yamaha. Can you help me find that, you know, over with the 30,000 other blue Yamaha R1s? But again, the experience of being around that many people who ride and everything else was just phenomenal.
Yeah, never did a GP race in Europe. I did a F1 race when I was in Italy, and that was crazy.
Probably insane. Similar, except that F1 costs 10 times as much. Oh, that yeah. I've been to F1 races, and that is a that when you talk about upscale sports, yeah.
Formula. That's it. Absolutely. I'm kind of looking forward though to the races in Vegas when they bring it to Vegas.
Yeah,
I want to see that. That's going to be sick.
Vegas is going to be awesome.
Absolutely. So I know you're limited on time, so I want to get to, you know, we do three questions with each one of our guests, and we're going to throw these questions out at you. They're not hard. I think they're always fun to hear the answers. So ready for your questions?
Yes, I am telling them I'm going to be a minute late, and okay. we're going to do this.
So if you could go riding with anybody, past or present, who would you like to go riding with?
Wow, that is a great question. You know who? I'd like to go ride with Michael Jordan because he likes motorcycles. That's somebody I'd love to ride with. Like I say, I've been fortunate enough to ride with Leno, so that was very cool.
Yeah.
Let's see, who else would I want to ride with, past or present? That's such a great question. You know, I'm going through this Rolodex in my head. I'd like to ride with the super racers. You know, I'd like to ride with Nicky Hayden or Kenny Roberts. The fun thing about being around racers is finding out how truly slow you are.
Right. Exactly. It's like I ran track in high school, and I went to Penn Relays, and I was actually, Carl Lewis was there running as well. And it was like, yeah, okay. Total different league, you know, didn't even come close. So next question, you've owned a lot of bikes and everything through the years, but if you could own the one bike, what would that be?
The one bike that does everything better than anything else, the BMW GS. It is truly the most amazing jack of all trades. I describe that bike as an elephant that can dance ballet. It's yeah. one bike. So if I was limited to one bike for the rest of my life or whatever, it would be a BMW GS.
Got a very good friend of mine. That's what she's riding now. And she's got 700,000 miles under her belt. And she's an interesting gal, lives in Vegas now, trains MMA fighters and stuff like that. So she's bad to the bone, and that's what she rides. So absolutely. Now, you've been around, you've seen a lot of different places, but if you could go ride anywhere in the world that you have not at this point, where would you like to go riding?
The Alps. I would love to ride the Alps. That's on my bucket list. I have been lucky enough to ride all over the United States. I've done the coast to coast thing, which is great. I love riding in the desert. The desert is just like meditative. It's silent and it's so huge. But yeah, I would love to ride the Alps, you know, ride above Italy and then end up at Mugello for a MotoGP race. That would be the ultimate bike trip.
That'd be good. Another good place, start at Milan and in Basel, Switzerland, rather than German border. So
yeah,
that's a beautiful ride.
Sounds like someone who's done it.
Yeah. Yeah. Been awesome. A few years, but yeah. But good times back in the day. Well, Alonzo, this has been a lot of fun. I really hope people are, you know, come check out your comedy, everything you do. It's you put a lot of great content out there, extremely entertaining, and I think maybe one of the best comedians out there these days.
Mario, I appreciate it. I love being on the podcast. I wish we had more time. I could talk to you for hours. I appreciate your love of comedy and of motorcycles. And we got to cross paths somewhere at one of these events, one of these rides. So we will listen. I love my publicist, but I'm going to get your info from her. We're going to eliminate the middle person and connect.
Sounds great. I'm looking forward to that because I know we can make some things happen. I've got some really big ideas that's coming to mind right now that we can do together.
That'll be fun. Thank you. Thank you to all your listeners, your podcasts. And again, who's paying attention is mine. And we'll see you out there, man. Ride safe and have fun.
Wonderful. Thank you, sir.